are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
My guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast this week is Taisha Nurse, Global Senior Director DEI at McDermott International Limited. Taisha is also a certified coach.
Thank you, Taisha, for being a guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast today. Wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to today's dialogue with you.
Brilliant. So to start with, give us a quick introduction to who you are and what you do.
So my name is Taisha Nurse. I am currently the Global Senior Director of Diversity and Inclusion at McDermott. McDermott is a global engineering, procurement, construction, and installation organization. So we're an energy, let's say. But my background is I have over 25 years of HR experience. I am American born, so I started my work experience in the US. However, only worked in the US for 2 years. I then transferred to London, still in investment banking. I've worked in the Caribbean in telecommunications and now at McDermott in energy for the last 10 years. I've worked across most of the centers of excellences in HR, so mobility, HRIS, compensation and benefits, recruitment, and also worked as an HR generalist. So the scope of my HR experience is quite broad, but I would probably say I'm now in my most favorite position, being diversity and inclusion. And it truly takes a bit of all of my experience and combines it quite nicely to help me navigate through what I kind of see some days as a web of challenges and opportunities, et cetera. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah. And I think your multi-country experience must come in really handy with a global organization that you work in.
Definitely. I say time and time again, diversity and inclusion is not a one size fits all. And at McDermott, we have over 25 countries. We're averaging 30,000 employees. And so it's being able to be very open to others' experiences, listening very intentionally to come up with strategies that will work for that particular market.
So how easy or difficult has it been to succeed as a DEI leader in an industry that isn't traditionally recognized for diversity or gender diversity? The industry isn't really known for being a very inclusive industry.
So I will say my organization, we would say we're very diverse, again, working across over 25 different countries, and diversity is measured across many, many dimensions, as we know. I would say from a gender perspective, there's scope to improve. But when you look at the nature of the business, being engineering, construction, you don't find many women even leaving their undergraduate studies or even in their secondary education going into STEM studies. So as an organization, we really need to look at establishing partnerships all the way down to perhaps secondary schooling to get more women into this type of industry. We're never going to achieve 50-50. It just doesn't exist in the market. But like I said, there's opportunities to improve. I think as a DE&I leader, I have been successful because we know that the world is changing and the market is changing and the industry is changing. And there is a focus on diversity and inclusion. We have a function of DE&I, and I work very closely with top leadership to say, what does our strategy need to be to continue to celebrate our diversity and bring more diversity into the organization? organization, but also to be inclusive. And all organizations want to be inclusive. That's effectively where everyone feels valued, respected, and recognized. And so even though I sit as a DE&I lead, it's my challenge, perhaps, what's perhaps difficult, is trying to make that everyone's responsibility, not just mine. I can't be accountable to being an inclusive and diverse leader for such a big organization. And so it's being able to create a message that resonates with every single employee, that they realize that I can contribute to creating more diversity and also inclusion within the organization. So those are the big pieces. But I think as a DE&I leader in the industry, it's not as challenging perhaps in the past, because the focus is growing and the understanding is also more clear to all leaders and throughout the world. So it's one step at a time. I always say it's a journey. It's going to take time, but we're getting there.
Yeah, I think the important thing is that you get started and you recognize that this is critical for the business. So if you are on that journey, that's brilliant. We spoke about this in the first question, that you worked across multiple geographies, and that sort of is definitely a superpower. It gives you an understanding of cultures, etc. As a global organization, you said you're present in 25 countries, 30,000 employees on an average. How do you go about creating an inclusive culture, one culture that everybody strives for?
It's challenging, because I think also the dynamics of our workforce is very different. So not only do we have our office-based staff, who I probably spent a lot of time trying to educate, raise self-awareness, run campaigns, and really engage that population, we also have probably over 15,000 employees working in fabrication yards. And so these are our blue-collared workers. I can't get them all in a room and do training. We also have employees on vessels. We work offshore. And so they're doing rotations where they live and work on a vessel. And so how do you tap into that culture? And then we have project sites in some of the most remote locations. And so an inclusive culture and creating one is a challenge, because it's, again, not a one size fits all in terms of how do we do that in some of these different locations. However, what we're trying to drive is a McDermott culture. Yeah. And so tap into what are our values? What is the culture that we want everyone to experience, irrespective of where you're sitting on this planet? And so it's looking at what are our values. It's educating our leadership on inclusive leadership behaviors. So they're adopting it into their language, into their day-to-day behaviors, into their decision-making. So that takes time, because effectively what we're doing is saying, when you walk through McDermott's doors, this is how we want you to show up as an employee, as a leader. This is the experience we want you to have. And so by definition of inclusion, we want you to feel that you can bring your whole self to work, that you feel that we value and respect you, that we celebrate your uniqueness, which is your diversity. And ultimately, we want you to be successful in the work that you do. And so is it a big challenge? I think, yeah, just organizational culture on a whole is going to be a challenge. But the inclusion part, of course, has its own challenges. But it's every day. One of our values is one team.
Yeah.
And so it's breaking down, what does that one team then mean when we think about inclusion? And how do we make sure that we're getting the best from our people? So creating it is setting it at the top. They must live it, breathe it, exemplify it, and then pushing it down and teaching others, what does that look like in your day-to-day interactions?
Yeah. Sounds like a huge, huge task. I can't imagine it being easy, and it must require a lot of engagement and coordination with leadership and, of course, different teams and functional heads and countries.
I mean, a part of the role, especially this year, that we've looked at doing a lot of cross-functional collaborations. So we're working with our ethics and compliance. We're working with our quality, health, and safety. We're working with communications. We're working with sustainability and social governance. We work with our leadership. And so it's looking at how do we drive this message? We work across all of the HR areas to make sure that the message is embedded in everything that we do.
Yeah, it's a huge task, nonetheless.
Yes.
And how important is cultural intelligence for your employees and leaders in today's world?
Well, cultural intelligence pretty much sits as our business strategy. So just to take a step back, McDermott, we operate as a MOPEX, which is a multi-office project execution organization. So that means we can have a project where the project director may sit in the U.S., the engineering is going to be done out of India. The fabrication may take place in the Middle East or let's say Indonesia, and you have individuals supporting from anywhere in the world. And so sometimes we work off this basis that we've brought the best resources together across the world. We threw them onto one team, and so they're going to have the same working styles, speak the same way, communicate effectively. And as that is so far from the truth.
Yeah.
So, as a part of our strategy, probably for the last 2 or so years, is looking at how do we build cultural intelligence, cultural agility in our managers so that they can flex their style of communication, so that they can flex their working styles to accommodate different cultures. And it's working well, of course. It's not intuitive. If you have someone that is very different from your style, even if they're from the same culture, that has its own challenges. Now imagine you're working with different time zones, even language could be different. It's going to be challenging. But we need to have cultural intelligence in order to have successful project execution. That's how we function. That's a part of our success.
Yeah. And the model that you said that you have as an organization, that means that this is just an imperative. So the definition of leadership since I was a young person has changed dramatically. Even in the last 10 years or in the last 3 years or post-COVID, Black Lives Matter, the definition of leadership has changed dramatically with all that has happened in the world. And it's moved on, I think, from where it was about command and control. What does leadership mean to you?
I think leadership, it has transformed. And I believe it's starting at a much earlier stage. So we have a younger generation coming out of university, and they feel they are leaders. So it's not being linked to perhaps work experience. It's not linked to age. It can be thought leadership. It can be individual contributors that are leaders. And I think if I go back to how you and perhaps myself, how we experienced leadership, it was authoritative. It was driven by age. It was hierarchical. Yeah. It was based on being very technical in your experience. And what we're seeing is this huge shift to being collaborative, very much people oriented. The softer skills are taking precedence. So we have a lot of conversations around being an empathetic leader. How do you coach as a leader? Being inclusive, being flexible and adaptable. And I think for some of the leaders that I know, this is huge, that if I say be empathetic, they're looking at me with cross eyes. Be compassionate. Mm-hmm. They're like, what are you talking about? And so, but that's the expectation from a new generation coming out, that my leader is not going to be hierarchical, that I can voice my thoughts and that we can collaborate, even though I may not have as much experience. I have knowledge and I have ideas. And the thought is that should be embraced. And so I think you're seeing, this definite shift in leadership to the softer side. And I think that goes sometimes a little further than the technical leadership that we know. Because if you're very agile and you can learn things and you can lead people, not necessarily processes, that takes you a lot further than just being very technical in your leadership style. So yes, it's changing, but I think there's some gaps in us being able to move a previous generation into this leadership style. That I think is going to take time.
Yeah, I think there is some resistance and reluctance.
Yes, still, even though we can say leadership has shifted, it's more softer skill, compassionate, empathetic leadership, being able to actively listen and relate to employees. We know that is the way forward, but yeah, there's definitely resistance from previous generations saying, well, we're just here to get the work done. Just do it.
Just do it. Yeah, absolutely. You can't win them all, yeah.
No.
So leadership and people in supervisory roles have a very critical role to play in creating inclusive and safe workspaces. Why is psychological safety critical to workplace inclusion? So we spoke about how we experience leadership or how we experience workplaces, and what was yesterday doesn't have to be today. So I guess the change is for good. But what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so when I think about individuals in these roles, they have a duty of care to create an inclusive and a safe workspace. And the nature of McDermott's work, where we're working in fabrication yards, safety is paramount. But I think in previous years, we spoke about physical safety. And what we realize is that psychological safety is actually linked to physical safety. So when we talk about creating these safe workspaces, it's beyond physical. It's psychological, where employees feel they can speak up, they can share their thoughts and opinions if it differs from status quo, that if they see something going wrong, not being done properly, that they can raise the flag immediately, and in our case, be able to stop work. But that comes with a level of, there'll be no retribution, I will not be penalized, that this is an environment where my thoughts, my ideas, my voice is actually welcomed. And if you don't have an inclusive and safe workspace, things can go very awry. And so what we're pushing is that we need to really start focusing on how do we build psychological safety. And that's down to your people in leadership. They have to start with demonstrating behaviors and that mindset that we want you to speak up, that we value your opinion. It's not this hierarchical do as I say. We need to expand that. And the younger generation will not tolerate.
No, they won't. They just won't.
No, they're not going to come to a work environment that's not inclusive and that's not a safe workspace.
Yeah.
So it's really important. And it's quite interesting to see the research and the conversations really starting to shift around psychological safety and how do you create that and how it impacts the overall work environment.
Yeah, I think it's a part of the older health and safety thing, which is just brought to include this. Very, very, very critical for successful workplaces. Do you believe, Taisha, that it's important to regularly measure and evaluate the work that's been done in the DEIB space in organizations? Because a lot of organizations speak about this. So there's a lot of talk that's happening, but not everybody can stand that scrutiny. And that's why probably measurement or accountability is essential. Well, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, we definitely have to evaluate. Measuring, tangible measurements are probably a little more challenging in the DEIB space, but definitely being able to tap in with engagement surveys, spot polls to understand how are your initiatives landing. I think in kind of the D&I space, it's absolutely imperative, because sometimes the dialogue, or if your efforts aren't truly understood, they can actually lead to unintended consequences. So where, let's say, diversity efforts are really driving inclusion, sometimes they can actually lead to exclusion. Yeah. So if gender, let's say, diversity targets, and you have a really strong effort around that, if it's not based on a holistic strategy and people don't understand it, it's not received very well. And so that constant evaluation, measuring how did what I intended to do land in the organization is absolutely critical. And I think in D&I, we have to be agile, be able to pivot, be able to change, and always kind of have our ear on the ground to understand where are we going. Because yes, it's a journey, but it's so quick and it's so transformative. Yeah. And it's moving at a speed that we just have to really be tuned into the business and to our people. So I think, yes, I've seen a lot of DE&I initiatives kind of out there, and people don't really look to see, well, is this working? They may revisit it in 2 years and realize 2 years later that the intent in the beginning and where they're landed is completely opposite. And the sentiment in the business is actually negative. So for D&I, I say you definitely ear on the ground, tap into how is it landing. If you need to change it, change it. If you need to scrap it, scrap it. Because the intention is so positive, but if it doesn't land well, it can actually do a lot of damage.
Yeah, that's so true. And you're saying, like, keep your ear to the ground, so important. And also, I think including everybody in, because sometimes we tend to be in our silos and leave probably potential allies out of the conversation. And that creates some resentment. I have sensed that previously.
Yes. And trying to undo that resentment takes more time.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, it's being quick on your toes. And when you kind of start hearing that, it's being able to address it very quickly and very openly and honestly, and go back to your strategy. What are you trying to achieve? And of course, it's always about including everyone, making sure everyone has fair opportunities in the organization. It's not to give to one and take from another.
Absolutely. I think that's, you've captured that very well. So if we look beyond, what are some of the trends that you're seeing that are going to define the future of work, especially because when COVID happened, we had hybrid, or we had remote, or we had flexible. And we see a lot of organizations now saying, get back to work, get back to work. But there are going to be some people who are never going to want to do that. What is it that you are seeing in your role and generally outside in the world?
Yes. When we talk about future, I really think that hybrid working and flexible working is today. So it doesn't even fall within that future of works, because we've been doing it for quite some time. What is, I think, shifting is the sentiment that perhaps you could have remote working for a number of jobs. I think that's kind of shrinking. There is a benefit of face-to-face human interaction. And so where we have some individuals or some companies that kind of went to perhaps that extreme of flexible working, they're kind of scrolling it back and saying, well, at least 2 days in the office, at least 3 days in the office, because I don't think you can replace that bond that you get when you're face to face. But again, all of that is happening, I would say, now. And it's just kind of depending on the industry and the organization, it's finding that right size. I think the future of work that I see coming up is, of course, AI, but I'm not an expert in there. So I won't elaborate on that. And even perhaps robotics. I'm in a construction industry. So will robotics take over kind of that manual labor? It hasn't done yet, but we know that it's coming. And I think what's probably trending and is coming sooner than later is I feel that companies are starting to embrace well-being and understanding the full life of, let's say, an employee. So in the past, we could outsource it to health insurance, will give you your needs, and an employee assistance program will help you if you have issues. But what we're starting to see is that strategically, organizations are starting to look at well-being in the workplace, and how do we support mental health in the workplace? It's not someone else's job to address it. It's the organization's job to incorporate it. And so there's a lot I find kind of moving into that space, which is really interesting to me. And it's new. It's very new for organizations to start embracing.
Yeah. And you said that organizations now understand that the life cycle of your career in the organization is what they need to look at holistically, and then probably design or respond to employee needs based on that rather than have some standardized. So I guess that is one big understanding that has come because of COVID.
Definitely. And I think when you think of inclusion and making sure that you can include everyone, of course, that's going to be at different stages of your life. The how it's being done, I think, is still a work in progress. I haven't seen a great structure in place yet. I think everyone's trying to figure out how do we include everyone at the different stages of their lives.
So we're on our last question. What is that one thing that you love most about the work that you do, Taisha?
The one thing, and I said at the beginning, it's probably my most favorite job in my 20 plus years, is it definitely keeps me on my toes, but it allows me to stay in the sphere of being a learner for life.
Yeah.
So every day, I'll have a conversation, I'll read something, I'll have an experience. And I think, wow, I didn't see it from that perspective. And so it's really putting me in a very open mindset. Even though I sometimes resist it, I want to be kind of in my comfort zone, but it puts me in this open mindset to see the world through someone else's eyes. When I'm thinking of a strategy, a campaign, the training that's required, being able to sit and think, okay, this is the audience, how are they going to receive it? And so just always being that learner for life helps me in the role, but also kind of, like I said, keeps me on my toes, keeps me engaged, just fascinated with people in general and change and things of that nature.
Yeah. You know, I must mention, you said learner for life twice, and I must mention, I don't know if you know Pamme Bassi from Kraft Heinz. I'll send you a link, and she wrote about 365 days of learning. And she's amazing, amazing. And she talks about that learning from life and learning from people. And I was so inspired by her a couple of years back. And it resonates with me so much what you say, that role. Every day you have a new experience, you're learning something new. And when I do my podcast, I think it's like that. It just gives me that opportunity to hear and listen. So what a wonderful way to end this conversation. Thank you so much, Taisha. I really, really enjoyed it. And I love this learner for life bit.
Thank you really for the opportunity just to speak about D&I. It's paramount to where we need to go across, not even organizations, but across the world. So love speaking about it. So again, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcast. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.